Hi.
Hello, Sasha. How's it going?
I'm fine, Stella. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. This was a lovely episode, a very kind of inspiring episode.
Yeah, we talked to Tamara Pitsky, who we kind of think about as an unlikely whistleblower. As you'll hear her in the episode, she said, "My friends laughed when they discovered that I was in this position because they thought I was the least likely person to become a whistleblower." And frankly, Tamara didn't even know the term whistleblower until somebody used it about her. So she is, as you'll hear, she's very soft-spoken, she's thoughtful, she's very sweet. And when she was working at this clinic called MultiCare, she started seeing things that really concerned her around very complicated young people with serious trauma, serious abuse in their background, with very dehumanizing identities. We're not just talking about your typical kind of I'm a trans guy and I'm proud kind of situation. We're talking about really complicated, bizarre identities like animal identities and things like that. And when she spoke up about her concerns, she was really shut down at every kind of step of the way by colleagues, by managers, higher ups. And so, in launched her experience of trying to speak out and, quote, blow the whistle. And it was lovely to speak with her today.
Yeah, I think a key part of the Tamara Pitsky story is the fact that she is a gentle, soft-spoken, moderate person who has no need, not standing on any soapbox, no major need to come on podcasts or radios to give her opinions. Doesn't actually have strong opinions, I'd say, often in life. If you follow me, one of life's moderates in every aspect of the word. And I think that speaks to what insanity is arguably going on, that she could see that this is not right, that they are extremists, and extremists had taken over the workplace. And her moderate opinion, she actually had to be forced out of the workplace because she was a moderate. I think that in itself, the moderates are getting pushed out, the extremists are holding the center, is such a frightening kind of vision of what's going on in therapy today.
And when I read the so her story came out in the Free Press, which is Barry Weiss's Substack in 2024, February this year. And when I read that story, and also Lior Sapir covered it more. So we'll definitely link to these other articles because we don't go into a ton of details in our interview today, but I highly recommend for listeners to go read these reports because the kinds of cases she was seeing were shocking. Like, remember when we had Jamie Reed on and she told us a couple of stories, and in her affidavit, there's these like unbelievable stories of severely disturbed kids being affirmed in their gender identities. It was a similar kind of thing that happened with Tamara. So the Free Press article came out, and then soon after, she switched positions and was fired from her new job, ostensibly, the employer didn't say so precisely, but as Tamara shares in her story, probably because of the kind of coverage she was getting it as a whistleblower. And she's now in this kind of place of limbo. And we really just wanted to give her a platform to share her story. And there's so much here that is quite terrifying. And, she says towards the end, "I believe that my future self will be really proud of me now, even though I've made my life hell in some ways. I really think this is the right thing to do." So I think it's just wonderful to have people like Tamara who are willing to go through that kind of gauntlet of, throwing your life into disarray because you want to do the right thing. Just it seemed so obviously the right thing for her to do, as you'll hear.
And it was, when you hear it, I think very few will listen and think she did anything except the right thing. She did the right thing. More importantly, she had the courage to do the right thing and stick with it and put her name to it. Do you want to go ahead and read her bio?
Tamara Pitsky is a mental health therapist, a licensed independent clinical social worker, and has been doing this work for 12 years. She worked a number of different places, but most recently she was working at MultiCare, one of Washington State's largest hospital systems, for 6 years. When she raised concerns about the shift towards mandated gender-affirming care, she was bullied and dismissed. She stopped working there in January of 2024, and a couple of weeks before her whistleblowing article came out in the Free Press. from MultiCare, she went on to a different practice, but they let her go after 3 weeks, claiming that she wasn't a right fit for the position, but not offering much more explanation. She has since been working on building up a private practice, and we talk with Tamara a little bit about that today. So please enjoy our conversation with Tamara Pitsky.
Hi, I'm Stella O'Malley, a psychotherapist in Ireland.
And I'm Sasha Ayad, an adolescent therapist in the United States.
And this is Gender, A Wider Lens, a podcast dedicated to the shifting concepts around gender in our contemporary culture.
Through in-depth interviews, personal stories, and psychological exploration, we seek to open up the discourse around this hot-button issue.
Join us as we look at gender from a wider lens.
Hi, Stella, and welcome, Tamara.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. We're delighted to have you. You're yet another whistleblower has arrived, and it's so inspiring when somebody chooses to speak up against when they see harm being carried out on children. So well done.
Thank you.
And you've really paid the price for speaking out in the first place. And we'll get to that in a minute. But for anyone who isn't familiar with your story, there was a big piece that came out in the Free Press several weeks ago now that told listeners a little bit about what you saw at your place of employment, working with children who were struggling with gender identity. So can you give us a bit of an overview of what you saw and what you witnessed? And then, of course, we'll make sure to direct people to the Free Press article, which is like more of an in-depth look.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So the first time that I started to have some concerns was in March of last year. I had a client come in, a 16-year-old, and say that they identified as a wounded male dog. And so then I talked with my colleagues about that. And I said, at what point do we not just like affirm people? At what point is it like mental illness? Like, I just feel like at some point we have to be like, okay, you're so traumatized by being a human that like now you want to identify as an animal. And the response from my boss, from my colleagues was, if they don't think it's a problem, that it's not a problem. Like, then you say, you applaud them for knowing who they are, and you just continue to do therapy about the things that they are saying are an issue. And
can I just ask you a quick question? First of all, that is already totally remarkable.
It blew my mind.
In private conversations with other clinicians, whether we're doing like peer consultations or kind of, you know, discussing cases, I have never heard anyone say something so absurd. So I'm wondering, was this one of those things where the clinician said, you know, I actually do have concerns about this kid too. However, on the surface, we have to be affirming. Like,
no.
Because that's already really strange.
No, it wasn't. It was, go ahead. Were you going to say something, Stella?
I'm going to add something. To agree with a person who says that they identify as a wounded male dog is to collude with the dehumanization of a person, if you follow me.
A child. And that's actually, of a child,
yeah,
specifically.
You're colluding with the fact that they're dehumanizing themselves. And mm-hmm. that's a fundamental harm to a human, to a child, to a human. And that's where we have to bring our humanity into the counselling process. That we've learned that from our history. We've learned that to dehumanise people is a really dangerous thing to collude with. If somebody is saying, I don't feel human, and you agree with them, you're actively participating in harm, is what I'm saying.
Already
in other places, people have, you know, dehumanised people as vermin. They've dehumanised people as, and it's been written about, and there's a lot of scholarship around this. It's a really harmful thing to do to any other human. Anyway, keep going. You just blew our mind with that first line.
Yeah. I mean, it was a dialogue between me and my colleagues. I said, okay, so what if this client identifies as a cat and wants to use a litter box? They're like, not a problem. I said, what if it's a grown man who identifies as an 11-year-old and wants to hang out with kids? And they said, well, you know, as long as he's not alone with them, if he wants to use coloring books, then it's not a problem. And this was like the dialogue. And I was like, oh my, okay. And I just didn't really know what to do with that. And so I just dropped it and kind of like carried on with seeing my client and just doing therapy with them. And eventually like the topic of wounded male dog kind of faded away. They still identified as a male And they are biological female, but we just did therapy around the other issues that were going on in their life.
And the setting where you worked, was it just a general counseling practice for adolescents? Were you in a hospital? Like, what was the place like? And I guess, were they a gender clinic? Or tell us about a little bit about the placement where you were working.
Sure. So I worked for MultiCare. It is a hospital system, but I wasn't in the hospital portion of the building. So it was just an outpatient counseling center. And then a lot of my clients who I was seeing, I saw all ages, all presenting issues. But then the ones who were youth who came in and were expressing gender distress, they did go to the gender clinic, the pediatric gender clinic at MultiCare. So I wasn't affiliated with that, but I could see the notes because we're all in the same system.
And so the colleagues you mentioned and your supervisor that you mentioned, were they part of the gender clinic or they were in your department, mm-hmm. your
they
section?
They were in my department.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're asking these hypothetical questions like, well, what if someone identifies as a cat? What if a grown man identifies as a child? And you're getting similar answers that are basically no harm, no foul, as long as the person declares the identity, kind of like what you touched on, Stella. I think it's well accepted that we shouldn't dehumanize others, but if a person's dehumanizing him or herself, or let's say claiming a different identity according to MultiCare, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So at that point, did you just say, okay, let me get back in line. Maybe I need to do some more reading. Maybe I don't understand something. Or did you realize like something is severely wrong here pretty early on?
I just kind of filed it away in the back of my brain and was like, because the response just blew my mind. And I don't even know how to process this or what to do with it. So I'm just going to keep doing my job and just like keep that in the back of my mind that this conversation happened.
Did you go and did you speak about it with your let's say your good friends or your colleagues or your partner saying, do you know what happened to me at work today?
Yeah,
or did you almost? Oh, you did.
Yeah, like to my best friend, I was like, am I crazy here? Like, isn't that something that would be considered like we need to deal with this as mental illness and not as something that we're celebrating? Yeah. And my friends were like, yeah, absolutely. But
okay. Wow. So you file it away. You keep doing your work. Pick mm-hmm. the story up. Then what?
Yeah. And so then I just kept seeing people and my clients who came in and were experiencing gender distress. I didn't do anything different with them. So it wasn't really an issue that I felt like I had to investigate or like do a lot of research on. It was the same as like anything for me, like anxiety, depression. And I just assumed that if they were seeing the gender clinic, that the gender clinic was doing their job. Like I didn't feel like that was something I had to look into any more than I would look into like what their neurologist is doing. Like I just trusted them. Yeah. And then in September, we were told that there was going to be a mandatory gender affirming care training. And the fact that it was mandatory was like just felt so like startling to me. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. I just was like, something is wrong here. And I didn't even know what gender affirming care was. So I know that makes me sound completely ignorant, but I just wasn't in this world. And so it was Labor Day weekend before the training. And I spent hours and hours after I put my kids to bed, just like doing research. And I was like, I would Google, like, what are the negative side effects of like hormone treatment in adolescence? And then the results that I was getting would be like, how to be a good friend to your LGBTQ like colleague or whatever. And I was like, that's not even what I asked. And so it just like really blew my mind that I couldn't even find direct answers. I did a lot of investigating and I wrote a letter because I was just going to refuse to go to the training. I was like, I don't agree with this and I cannot be a part of it. And so I wrote a letter and then I reached out to every single person that I found online, like anyone who wrote an article about it, anyone who like had an organization about this topic. And I said, will you look at this letter and will you please tell me if I'm missing something here? Because I'm going to lose my job over this if I don't go to a mandatory training. And I just want to make sure that like I am not being misled here.
Yeah.
And so people wrote back and were very like, congratulations for like seeing through this and not just going along with it. And then I was advised to go to the training. They said, if you don't go, then you're going to render yourself irrelevant. You're going to get fired and then you lose any power you possibly could have in this situation. So go and then ask the questions about these things that you wrote in your letter. Because you're not wrong. Like these things are important to address. So just gently, kindly, without like trying to be mm-hmm. controversial or like antagonistic, ask these questions. And so that's what I did. And it was terrifying. I could see my heartbeat in my stomach. It was so terrifying.
And were lots of trainings mandatory? Like, why did it strike mm-hmm. you that it was mandatory? So this was the first time. So they used to offer like, oh, we're going to have a workshop on substance abuse if you want to check it out. Like, they were optional prior yep. to this.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So these monthly trainings were recently introduced, but we were told they're not mandatory. If you can fit them into your schedule, go ahead. And if not, you don't have to go. And so then when it said that it was mandatory and it was, I was like, that doesn't feel good to me.
Can I ask, you said that you didn't know what gender affirmative care, and in fairness, I think a lot of people don't. I don't think it's a reflection. I think they're working it, but they don't know that they're working it. But then you knew enough to look for issues with it, if you follow me. Was it purely the fact that it was so incongruous that it was mandatory that made you go, hang on, what's going on? Yeah.
Yeah. And I sort of had this suspicion that it was going to be like, you just agree with whatever they say, just like the wounded dog thing. Right. And so in the back of my mind, I was like, is that what this is? Is that what they're going to tell us that we have to do? And so that's why I started to like dig into it.
So you were kind of primed to have a little suspicion about the push to just blindly agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then I went to the training and then I asked a couple questions. Like one of them was, okay, so if countries in Europe are pulling back on this, why are we mandating it now? Why are we like running full steam ahead in this? And I was met with so much hostility. The chat box blew up and said, you're doing harm to people. Keep politics out of this. You're part of the problem. The presenter was like, we're not going to have this conversation. I want to make it very clear that this is best practice for multicare and anything else will not be tolerated. So
can I ask, was this an online training? Is that what you mean by? Okay. I want to just pause and talk about something that I've experienced because I went through a very similar situation in 2015 when I was working in a middle school.
Oh, really?
And I had been tracking the gender stuff for about a year or so. Maybe this was 2015, 2016. And I was presenting my concerns to my manager. I worked for a school. And there were like 13 campuses. And I presented my concerns to my manager. And what she told me at the time was, you know, Sasha, the pace of change is so rapid that I can't even keep up with the LGBT stuff. So that's why we have to just defer to the experts. And lo and behold, a few months later, we had a mandatory training for all of our staff, which in our case, that was normal. There were lots of mandatory trainings about trans stuff. And in this case, the training was in person. And so all the school counselors from the 13 different campuses were gathered together in one room. And somebody from an advocacy organization came in and gave us basically what is an affirmative care training. And I had I guess I was lucky that it was in person. And so when I was asking questions in person, the way it was received was super different. And so like, I know from just following this world that when you're online, people are so much more hostile. And if you put a question in the chat box that you had asked in person in a room full of flesh and blood people, I almost guarantee like it would have landed differently. So I just think it's particularly important that we lift up. Like this happened to Aaron Terrell, who's a transgender man who went to the WPATH conference online. And he was also like kicked out of a chat room. So I just feel like the in-person versus online thing makes it even more complicated. So I'm so sorry to kind of like derail the story, it's a remarkable similarity. Mm-hmm. And yet your experience was totally different.
Yeah. So initially when I started asking questions, I would just unmute myself and ask them verbally because I felt like, you know, that was the best way to make myself heard. And then people would like respond in the chat box. And then the presenter was like, I'm not going to keep doing this. I'm not going to keep answering your questions. And so then I would just put the questions in the chat box directly. And then it was like, she said, I want to make it very clear. We're not doing this. So like what's happening in the chat box needs to stop. Like this is best practice. She just like shut me down basically.
And did you have anybody allying with you saying, well, I want to ask that too?
In the moment, no. So afterwards, my boss messaged me and was like, you know, I just want to make it clear that I think that you mean well, but that was not the correct forum to ask those questions. So then when would be, right? Like behind closed doors where no one else can be made aware of these concerns. Like, yeah. So then she was like, I just wanted to let you know that that was not the correct forum to do it. And I had four people reach out to me afterwards and like email and just said like, you didn't say anything wrong in the training. You weren't being political. Like, we have these same concerns. Thank you so much for speaking up. We saw how you were treated and now none of us want to say anything. So I had four, there was 122 people in the meeting and four people reached out afterwards, but no one in the moment was able to come to my defense because who would want to jump in and be part of that attack, you know?
Well, I would.
Gosh.
I appreciate that about you.
I would too. Okay. So that sent you a very, very clear message about how questions and concerns are received. And tell us what happened next. So people privately email you and say, you weren't wrong, but I would never have your back publicly. Like that kind of thing.
Basically, yeah.
Then what?
And so then I just kept kind of like, I followed up with about the training and I said, I just want to get these, you know, ask these questions and I'm recording everything, right? Like anything that I get back in email, I'm keeping a record of it. So I asked these questions like, hey, I just wanted to get direct answers about this. And so there's like this email dialogue going on for a while. And I'm told basically that I don't know what I'm talking about, that I need to check my biases, that we're not going to agree on this topic. And so that's kind of where things were for a while, just like this back and forth dialogue where none of my concerns were actually specifically addressed or else they were just like minimized. At no point did anyone say, and I'm writing my boss and the training person, like I'm including both of them. My boss never responded, but the person who did the training kept, you know, responding. And at no point did she say, can you show me what you're reading? Let's look at this together. Let's like, even to be like, you're wrong. Like she had never asked for anything to where are you getting your information? Let's have a conversation about this. Mm-hmm. It was just shutting me down and making me feel like I'm a transphobe. Right. So, That's so telling. Yeah.
You know what I mean? The very ordinary and normal response to that, if somebody came to me with new information and completely negated what I've got to say, your immediate response is, where did you hear that? Let me see this. Let me have a look. It's so telling that they just went closed doors, button on the hatches, stop speaking.
Was the trainer a colleague of yours or was this somebody brought in from an outside organization? Like what was the relationship of the trainer who did that presentation?
Yeah, she also worked for MultiCare. She worked for a different area of MultiCare. So I did not ever meet her in person or interact with her. But she, I found out after the training, was being promoted to like manager of the new gender clinic they were opening in Olympia. So they, and my boss was like, I want you to know that this person is an expert in this area. So what if she's saying something to you, then you basically need to defer to that because this is her expertise.
That's a common theme, right? We have to defer to the experts. And the experts are the people who only hold one particular view and frankly ignore all of the evidence. So that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then what?
So then I had a 13-year-old child come in. And this child was not super verbal. They were on the autism spectrum. While we were talking, they would just like show me, quickly scroll through videos on their phone of like anime, horror, and like sexually graphic materials.
To show you?
Yeah, like they couldn't barely talk to me, but they would just like stand by my desk and just like scroll through and say like, this was their hyperfixation is what they said. And that they related to these like wounded, like bloody faced, like just all this stuff. And I only met with them three times. And I at one point did a consult with somebody because I was like, I don't want to be exposed to this. This isn't productive. Like, I don't think we're doing therapy here. But I never was able to kind of like work through that with them because, well, I'll get to why, so they had this extensive trauma history. They weren't really very verbal. And then the dad expressed that, so the client went to the gender clinic. When I asked the client, I said, hey, I see that you haven't, cause now I'm like curious and I'm a little bit suspicious of the gender clinic.
Yeah.
So I said, I see you have a gender clinic appointment coming up. The kid didn't even know. Had no idea that they had an appointment. I said, how do you feel about that? They're like, I don't know. And then they just moved on scrolling on their phone. And so then I talked to dad and he expressed that the gender clinic after their first appointment was ready to get a letter from me to allow the kid to start taking testosterone.
A female child,
13-year-old, with like so many, like you can read about it, like you mentioned in the Free Press article, there's so much going on here. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, severe developmental delay going on.
So then when I was reading through the gender clinic note, they weren't quoting the child, but they were saying, this is what the child is saying. And I'm like, there's no way this child who can barely talk is communicating so clearly with you about wanting to become a male. So then I asked my boss about that too. And she's like, you have to trust that they know what they're doing. The process for this is so extensive. Like they're, you know, just kind of like minimize my concerns about that as well. Like if that's what they're saying, the client said, then that's what they're saying. Cause they would never, like, after the first appointment, they're saying, yeah, sign this 13-year-old up for like testosterone. I just am not buying that their process is so rigorous and so like, you know. So after I got that request for a letter, I asked my boss again and the person who did the training. And I said, hey, I don't feel comfortable with this. I just want to be really clear that like, this is what you would say I need to do, that I need to write this letter. And I really, in my silly little clueless brain, thought they'd be like, oh, well, of course not. Like, if there's those issues going on, then you obviously you don't write the letter. And that is not what they said. They said there is no reason why mental health or trauma history would impact someone's gender identity. And if they're wanting a letter, you write that letter. Also in the gender clinic note, there, it's like a form note, right? So they fill in things, but there's part of the form is that says, if your provider is not gender affirming, then they can be doing more harm to you. So find somebody else who is gender affirming. So basically like, Jesus. If your provider is not going to write you this letter, then find somebody who will, because your provider has a problem here. So after I asked that question about the testosterone, my boss came in and was like, I just want to let you know, like, this has gone over my head. There's nothing I can do. But the person who did the training has reported you to risk management. So then I'm like, finally, now risk management. And I can finally have a conversation about how we're doing harm to these kids. Like, again, I'm so dumb. I think that this is actually going to go in my favor. But I'm like,
can I say, you have traveled the path that so many of us, including me, thought, oh no, I just need to explain to people what's going on. Then they'll get it and they'll do the right thing.
Absolutely.
I know exactly where you were coming from. It wasn't dumb. It's utter belief in the humanity of other people.
Yes. And so I'm like, okay, we'll have this meeting. And so the risk management and I met and I'm like, yeah, of course, look at this client's chart. Look at all these reasons why I'm concerned. And then risk management decided that I was the risk. And so they took the client from me and gave it to somebody else on my team who obviously would write the letter for testosterone. I think that's kind of where things ended. At one point I did ask just for clarification from risk management. I said, you guys are looking at like SOC 8 guidelines here, right? And because I wanted in writing that that's what they're going off of. And she said,
smart.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we're looking at. And I started looking for a new job and found one and gave my 2 weeks notice in December. So from September of the training to December, so much happened, so much conversation. And just like, I was just so disillusioned.
So you had really educated yourself. If you were starting to talk about SOC 8 and you'd obviously figured out what was going down from the wounded dog until the developmentally delayed person.
Yeah, I still definitely don't consider myself an expert, but I feel like I know enough to know that like we shouldn't be medicalizing children, you know? And I just keep thinking about how there's that statistic that 80% of gender dysphoric youth outgrow that. And if we can't decide, or if we have no way of determining who's going to be that 20%, then we shouldn't be medicalizing any of them. And if their brains aren't fully developed until they're 25, they should not be able to consent to these treatments. So that's what I'm super clear on. The rest of it, I'm still learning and trying to like understand, but I'm very clear on that. You know, we should not be medicalizing young people.
Yeah. We want to take a moment to thank our sponsors, GenSpect and Therapy First. GenSpect is an international organization committed to fostering a healthy approach to sex and gender. The team and members of GenSpect strive to promote high-quality, evidence-based care for gender nonconforming individuals. Genspect is pleased to offer a non-medicalized approach to gender with their recently published Gender Framework, and they continue to hold conferences around the world. Visit genspect.org to learn more.
Therapy First is a non-profit worldwide professional association of mental health providers who view psychotherapy as the appropriate first-line treatment for gender dysphoria. Therapy First supports psychotherapists working with gender dysphoric youth and young adults and offers public education on mental health and psychotherapy. Visit therapyfirst.org to learn more.
Now, back to the show. So, you put in a resignation, right? You didn't lose your job, but you were basically being nudged out. You were basically communicated that if you cannot comply, then we are going to keep hounding you until you do. Similar to what happened with Jamie, right? Jamie Reed. So you decided you needed to resign or leave. Can I just ask, I mean, did you ever have a point where maybe someone in your family or somebody you're talking to or you just thinking about your life where you said, you know, I need this job. I have kids. I could just go along and just see what happens. Maybe these kids will be fine, you know, if we write the letter. Like, did you ever have a decision point like that? Because frankly, there are a lot of people who are writing these letters, and I don't think they're all terrible people,
no,
but I'm curious about, was it very clear from the whole time that you just could not get on board with this? Or did you have moments of wavering? Because I think that's very natural.
It's funny because I didn't. Like, even now when people are like, you're so brave, I was like, I just feel like it was never an option. Like, I never deliberated or asked myself, like, how am I going to respond to this? Like, I was just doing the thing that felt right. Like, if you saw someone drowning, you try to save them. Like, I never was like, should I jump into the pool? Like, obviously, like, you're not going to just not do anything. And so there was no point that I was like, what should I do here? You know? And I knew right from the start when I was going to write that letter and say I wasn't going to go to the training, I knew that I could lose my job over it. And I just felt like, what other option do I have here? Like, I hate that I'm in this situation. I hate that so much. But, like, there's no part of me that can just go along with it, you know?
Yeah. I almost wonder if it's because you were such an outsider to the world of gender that you had such a strong conviction about it. Because what we've seen from, for example, the leaked WPATH files is that when people are deep in that ideology, your sense of morality and right and wrong gets really warped. And you have very intelligent experts who keep finding ways to justify pretty horrific and experimental interventions on really vulnerable kids. And so I wonder if it's precisely because you knew nothing about gender that, like, you saw this and you were like, wait a minute, this is really terrible.
Yeah,
whereas others who were getting the trainings and doing the advocacy work and, like, learning about gender identity, they kind of get blunted to the shock of doing these medical things to kids.
Yeah, I never thought about that, but possibly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you resign. Then what happens? Because you are now under investigation. So fill the gaps. There's a lot here.
Yes. So I resigned. I started a new job in January. It was going fine. It was I was doing neurofeedback, but I was hired to be like a neurofeedback clinician / counselor. And my new employer kept saying, like, you know, if the neurofeedback stuff's not for you, then you can absolutely just do counseling. Because I was like, that's where my passion is, right?
Can you just explain what neurofeedback is? It's very different than therapy. So I just want our listeners to understand.
I did it for 3 weeks, so I'm not an expert on this either.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's basically where you, like, look at your brain waves and you try to get your brain to, like, give more of the positive brain waves, and it helps eliminate anxiety, depression, that sort of thing, by, like, training your brain to stay in alpha more than other things, right? Is that your understanding also? Am I explaining that well?
My understanding is that it's not super evidence-based, but it is this, like, it's supposedly a biological intervention where you're doing various kind of stimuli to a patient while they're wearing all kinds of electrodes. Like, so it's not like talk therapy, which is your bread and butter, right? So, okay.
Yes.
So go ahead.
Yeah, so I was hired on, and I thought that would be something that I was doing kind of like in addition to counseling, like, and I was like, okay, sure, whatever. But then they made it pretty clear that, like, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to train you here. And then I wasn't doing a whole lot of counseling, but I did have people follow me from MultiCare to do counseling. Anyway, so I say all that because it's going fine. I'm doing training. I'm doing my counseling with my clients from MultiCare. My employer is making it clear that if I want to do just counseling, that's fine. If I decide that neurofeedback's not my thing. And then 3 weeks after I start the job, the free press article comes out. And I let my boss know about it because I was like, well, I think that she should hear it from me versus somebody else. And then it makes this look shady, you know? And she never responded. When I just texted her the link and was like, let me know if you want to meet and talk about any of this. And she never responded. And so then the next day I said, just wanted to see if you had any questions about that. Or I just wanted to see if you got my message. And she's like, kind of just skimmed over that and responded to something else. And then by the end of the week, she had let me go. She said, you know, what we really need here is a neurofeedback clinician. And I said, okay, well, if that's what you need, I don't want to not have a job. I thought that I was going to be able to potentially do counseling. Like, so she just like did a, you know, totally turned it around and acted like that there was no room for me to be a counselor. And so I said, well, if that's what you want, like a full-time neurofeedback clinician, I don't want to not have a job. I can do that. I mean, counseling is where my passion is, but I can do that. And she's just kind of like, didn't say anything. And so then I said, and this is 7 o'clock at night. My kids are crying in the background. Like, it's just chaos. So, she didn't say anything. And then I was like, but if you're trying to get rid of me right now, like, I don't want to just be not, I don't want to be not reading between the lines. I don't want to be like sticking around when this conversation is actually like your way of saying you're fired. And so then she's like, yeah, I just don't think you're the right fit for this position. And so it led me to believe that it had something to do with the article, because why else would she suddenly be like, nope, we don't want you to be here. Like, we want a full-time neurofeedback clinician, when she knew I was bringing clients for counseling, you know, from my previous place of employment. And she had just said 24 hours prior, even like, yeah, if you want to be a counselor, that's fine. So then I lost my job.
Were you surprised?
I was absolutely surprised, because when she didn't respond to the article, I was like, well, maybe it's a non-issue and she doesn't care. I think she was probably just formulating, okay, well, what do I want to do here? You know?
Yeah. And she was afraid to say anything because she thought, she'll blow the whistle on us. So that's why she shut it down, like, just didn't say anything.
Yeah, I was completely, did not see it coming. So then I'm, like, unemployed with 3 young children to feed and trying to figure out what's next for me, you know? And so at that point, I was like, you know, I think that I've, somebody else used this terminology, but made myself radioactive in some way. Like, no one's going to hire me now. I should just look in, and I don't want a boss. I don't want to do this again where I like start a job and then get let go because I'm Tamara the whistleblower or whatever, you know? And so then I was like, I'll just do private practice. I'm licensed to, I can do that. And so I start looking into what that's going to take. And then about a month after the article came out, I got a cease and desist letter from MultiCare saying, you know, if you talk about these clients, we might potentially sue you. And then about 3 weeks ago, I got a letter from the state saying that, I'm under investigation, that my license is under investigation and I could potentially lose it. And they said that the reasons were, I said the client's age, which is not PHI, but in their letter, they said could make the client identifiable to somebody else, that I wasn't being gender affirming. I did not use the client's chosen pronouns in the free press article, and that I suggested that gender dysphoria is mental illness, which it's in the DSM. But that's what the letter said. So those are the reasons why they're investigating me.
You must have been devastated. It feels Soviet.
Yeah, I'm like, you guys are looking at the wrong thing here. All I'm trying to say is, like, let's protect these kids. And instead, you're like just discounting me by calling me a transphobe, saying that maybe I shouldn't even be a therapist. Like, it's just madness. Like, I can't even like wrap my head around what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
And I just don't understand.
Yeah. It's really devastating. And I understand that you have attorneys who are helping you with this case.
Yeah.
within the bounds of what you can say, what's their impression of this? And are they familiar with the gender stuff? Because, like, it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. You are an outsider from gender. This happened to you. I really hope your attorneys are not outsiders from gender, because this is very classic gender stuff. Silencing, dodging the real harm to, like, go after language harm about pronouns. This is actually quite classic. So are your attorneys, like, pros at gender? I hope they are.
Yeah, so my main attorney mostly deals with detransitioners. So yes, way more knowledgeable in this area than I am. And then the two people I got connected with recently, my understanding is that their expertise, while they know about gender, is more about people who are being, like, medical professionals whose licenses are being threatened. So,
Okay.
Excellent.
So, my understanding going forward is that there's probably going to be an administrative hearing, that it's not going to go in my favor, that, you know, just that I should just expect to be reprimanded. You know, whether or not I'm going to lose my license, I hope not. I think they just want me to shut up and go away. And, like, then as long as I'm quiet, as long as I just, like, you know, accept my punishment, and then life will just move on for me, and I can, you know, whatever, I'll be on probation for a couple of years, and then I'll have learned my lesson not to talk. But every time I talk to my lawyers, I'm like, whatever you guys think I should do, I'll do. Like, I'm in it now. Like, I've sacrificed everything. Like, I obviously care so much about my family and taking care of them, but, like, I care about creating a better world for them too. And that's what I'm trying to help accomplish here, is, like, as much as I can, as little old me who doesn't know a lot about this, I want to have a voice. I want to be able to say, I, as a therapist, was not able to express my concerns. First of all, how alarming is it that our medical professionals, if they see something that is concerning to them, are, like, reprimanded for saying that it's a concern? You know, like, that's terrifying. just my experience, I feel like, has just been so baffling to me. And I just desperately want things to change for these young people who are just lost and confused. And who isn't when they're a teenager? Like, that's part of being a teenager, is figuring out who they are. And let's create the safe space for them to do that, where they're not making lifelong changes to their bodies, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, your attorneys don't seem to be very hopeful. They think you will be reprimanded, which is very concerning.
I think because I'm in Washington State, like, this, we are so woke here that, like, anyone who's not part of that mentality is considered, I mean, part of the problem. So I think that the lawyers I talked with are local, the ones I just met with, and they were just like, we've done lots of cases like this. I just want to let you know, like, this is how it's going to be. Like, it's not going to be a fair hearing. It's not going to go in your favor. And so you just need to, like, expect that. So, yeah, it blows my mind. Like, so then what are we doing here as, like, a society if I can't even go there and be like, here's what I'm trying to say, if it's just to go in and be punished, you know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. We hope you're enjoying this conversation as much as we are. We just wanted to take a quick moment and say thank you to all of our listeners. Your support helps us to keep the lights on and the mics hot.
We recently made the switch to Substack so we could build a more robust listener community. Visit widerlenspod.com and check out the different subscription tiers.
For just $8 a month, premium subscribers get access to weekly bonus content, discussion posts, and more.
And founding members get the inside track on who's coming up on the show, with the ability to submit their own questions for our esteemed guests.
For those of you who are in need of parenting support and resources, we each have parent coaching membership groups. Plus, you can buy our book, When Kids Say They're Trans.
And if you're watching this on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe, and get involved in the lively discourse in the comments section.
Thank you so much. Now back to the show. Have you received other feedback that is supportive and hopeful and positive. I mean, you and I have talked a little bit, of course, outside of this recording, and my understanding is like your family and loved ones are super supportive. Like, tell us what else has been people's responses to this whole process.
Sure. Yeah. So my close friends, there's a couple of them who are like, yeah, absolutely. I've got your back. Don't stop now. Like, keep doing what you need to do. And then I have friends who are like, Tamara, I'm just worried that they're going to think you're a transphobe. Like, maybe you should stop. Or don't you value your kids' futures? Like, why are you sacrificing everything? Like, look at your kids now that you don't have a job. And so even my well-meaning friends, some of them, I just feel like this has been so divisive, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As far as like what's being said to me from people that I don't know, I've gotten a lot of people have reached out and been so incredibly supportive. I have the Give, Send, Go. And sometimes when I'm feeling down, I look through the comments there and I just feel so grateful that there's people who are appreciating what I'm trying to accomplish, because it can feel very, very much like just lonely or like, what's the point, you know?
Yeah.
Or people just don't get it. Yes. And I know that people have said negative things about me too. I have not Googled myself. I do not care to read what anyone is saying. People who've reached out to me directly have all been incredibly kind. And I'm so grateful for that.
I wanted to know more about your Give, Send, Go. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah. So right before the article came out, I got connected with the Courage Coalition. So Jamie Reed, I believe, was the founder of that. And there's other people also involved. Basically creating a safe space or like a soft landing kind of for future whistleblowers, so that like if you do lose your job, if this thing does, horrible thing does happen to you because you aired your concerns, like this organization, these people will help you be okay. Like, you will not go hungry. It's so important that people that have concerns know that this organization is there.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you are just like floundering and like, what's next for me, you know? So they created this Give, Send, Go to raise money to just kind of like help me meet my basic needs until I'm able to start working again, which I thought would be sooner rather than later. But now that this whole investigation's happening, I'm like, oh, thank God for that Give, Send, Go. Man alive, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've been incredibly supportive.
I've seen it that we've got a program in Jesbeck called Beyond Trans where people prioritize the non-medicalized approach to gender dysphoria. And, you know, they're on a directory, so they're therapists as such. But some of them I've seen, we were discussing this earlier, they to get around these kind of very, as I said earlier, Soviet, Stasi-like kind of restrictions on conventional therapy, some people are choosing to be a consultant or a parent consultant or a coach, rather than to fall in with what is, frankly, it seems to be rotten from the inside out, organizations that I have noticed in my work time and time again, they do presume that the local trans lobby group is the expert, and they don't actually seem to be very well informed themselves. It's really noticeable when you speak to them. They give themselves away with little phrases. They often say, let's say, for example, they might say body gender dysmorphia or something. That you can hear just these little phrases and you think they don't know very much, and they bow to these experts. But hopefully there will be way forwards for yourself through these organizations like Beyond Trans, or I think there's Open Therapy, and of course there's Therapy First, and there's Critical Therapy Antidote. There's lots of thoughtful therapists, of course. There's loads of organizations now that are providing support and offering an alternative viewpoint to. And arguably those organizations that I've named are protecting conventional psychotherapy, protecting it. Like.
Yeah. And I want to say, this isn't an alternative. This is being lifted up in all of the European countries who have done systematic reviews as the primary intervention. It's supposed to be psychological support. So I think it's what's really difficult here in the U.S., particularly in certain states where legislation has not caught up at all with the science. It makes it seem as though you're an outlier, but actually you are way ahead of the curve, because in 5 years, everybody is going to be doing psychological support.
Totally.
So it's just, I know it's so disheartening, but I feel very strongly that you providing psychological support before gender affirmation is the standard and it's the best practice in terms of what we know globally about best practice. This is the closest thing we have, actually. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a like a house of mirrors kind of thing right now when your yes. approach is being made to sound so out there. It's actually not. It's very safe. It's the safest way.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And were you worried about coming out to the public, I suppose? You know what I mean? Having your name on it? Because a lot of people seem to come out, let's say, they come out, but they don't come out because they don't use their name. And you were very, I'm glad you did, very honest and brave. In fact, you reminded me of something earlier on. I remember reading a study about men who in the World War who were given a Victoria Cross for bravery, and they were interviewed about it. Like, you know what I mean? A great act of bravery is what they had carried out, and they won the Victoria Cross. This is over in England. And they each said exactly what you just said, Tamara, which was, I didn't have any choice. I just had to do it. Like, it was the road before me. It was the appropriate thing to do. More shocking that anybody else wouldn't do it, really. And that seems to be the instinct of a brave person, that they just jump in the water. It's just like, look, somebody's drowning. Do you know what I mean? Sure. Which is, it's a credit to you. But I wonder, did you agonize much, to go back to my question, about your name, about going out in public? Did you look and see how Jamie Reid had landed? How much were you kind of acquainting yourself with this whole world?
Yeah, so I did talk to Jamie about it and just kind of like had things, like was preparing myself for what could potentially be coming when the article came out. As far as putting my name on it, my thought was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it. Like, I'm not going to do it like I have something to hide or like I'm ashamed. Like, I'm going to just be in it. Like, I'm already in it. And so, which isn't to say that somebody who doesn't want their name in it is ashamed, but I just felt like I want to be in it 100%, you know? Even if there's backlash, I just feel like that's what I have to do here. So it wasn't really something I deliberated.
Yeah. Well, what do you see kind of coming next? I know you talked about feeling a bit stymied right now because you were thinking about going into private practice, but now there's this investigation. Are you kind of stuck in a place of limbo, or like where do things stand for you right now?
Yeah, no, I still want to start seeing people. I just think I feel a little bit like, I mean, I just feel like, is that, I don't know. So I just try to like think about it because I don't know what's coming down the road. If I'm seeing people and then suddenly I have to like go to court, like how fair is that to them? You know, like, or what if my license is taken and then they lose their therapist? Like I did that at MultiCare when I left. I did that at the last place I was at when I left, you know, people followed me from MultiCare. I don't want to keep like dropping my clients when they think that, you know, that they can depend on me. And so I feel just a little bit like, okay, I was so motivated to do this private practice thing. And now I just feel like I want to sleep. I just feel tired. Oh. I don't know what to do. So it's just easy to be like, oh, I'm just going to take a nap.
Well,
you can't take a nap forever. That means something different.
Yes.
The stress is enormous. It's an extraordinarily frightening. You're very cool about it here, but it's an extraordinarily frighteningly disruptive. It's like you were on this path and suddenly you're on another path, and there's no obvious road ahead, and that's very frightening often.
Yeah, it is. And it's also just like, I don't know, just so disillusioning that society is the way that they are right now, that this is how I've been received. So just trying to like process all of that is just, it's just taken, it's a lot, you know, but
it's amazing because I think a lot about regional differences. And I mean, prior to moving to Arizona, I lived in Texas. And of course there were definitely people who took issue with my approach to things, but for the most part, I have not really had any pushback. Like when I have conversations with people at dinner parties or I meet people out and about, people think it's quite reasonable to have concerns about medical interventions for kids. And what's really remarkable is like people that I've gotten to know in this gender world who live, for example, in the Northeast or the Pacific Northwest, like where you are in Washington, the climate is so dramatically different. And I don't know what it's like in Ireland or the UK, if there's like these pockets, these regional pockets of massive difference. But man, it's so strange because I have had pretty much nothing but support and interest when I talk about my work. So it's just so disheartening to hear how hostile your environment is for, ironically, an environment that claims to be so open-minded and progressive. It's weird. I wish you could feel more hopeful. And frankly, I mean, I'm sure our listeners would agree, and I'm certainly here rooting for you, but I think there are lots of ways you could continue to practice and work, because it's very much needed to do good old-fashioned regular therapy with these kids who have a lot of complicated issues. And I'm sure you could find a very kind of supportive environment via the internet or whatever.
I mean, I definitely have hope. I think that things are shifting. And as far as like what I'm able to do in the future, I think that that's all going to figure itself out, you know? Mm-hmm. Just it's right now I'm like, man, things are so wild. I did not see this coming.
Fortune favors the brave. I think if you did set up, I know that there would be, you know, I know you have set up, but if you created your own niche, I think you guys call it a niche, but anyway, I'll call it a niche. If you created your own scene, I think you would be, you know, gratified to see that there's a huge, huge demand that can't be met, frankly, it's not only people who've been harmed by medical transition, it's parents, it's people who are deeply trans-identified. There's a lot of different groups that are seeking people like you who just operate an ethical, conventional, therapeutic approach. There is a big demand. There's one question I want to ask before we go towards the end, which is you mentioned that you Googled lots of groups. You were kind of, I always ask, mm-hmm. I'm always very interested in that. When you Googled, you were basically going, hang on, this affirmative approach that I'm being sent to with a kind of a mandatory kind of attitude. What did you Google and who did you find when you did? Because I can't get out of my echo chamber because the algorithm just sent me straight to all my pals. What did you find when you Googled them? Do you remember what were the words you used?
I don't. I spent, like I said, three days, just like hours and hours reading and trying to figure out and then looking at key phrases and being like, okay, so that got me something that, you know, that search got me something, one article that seemed like, okay, yeah, that's something that I can use. And so then I would just follow that article to like something else, you know, so I don't really know. I know I got connected with Therapy First and Segum and just a whole bunch of different organizations.
And was there a moment when you thought, I'm sitting on a whole movement here? There's a whole huge groundswell of people who are thinking this.
I felt like I wasn't crazy when I realized that there's other people fighting this, you know, fight. And that was very encouraging because I was like, what is happening? Why do I feel so like this is not okay? And that's not what Google's telling me at all. They're telling me it's great.
Yeah. Can we ask one last question for the main portion and then we'll jump over into our Substack exclusive content. We were kind of talking before, do you like apply to be a whistleblower, or how does that technical designation land on people? Because there may be people listening who are therapists working in various clinics who also want to kind of speak out. And I'm aware that some laws will protect some aspects of quote whistleblowing, but can you share to the best of your knowledge, what is a whistleblower exactly?
Yeah, I had never even heard the term whistleblower until somebody used it to describe me. I was like, I did not seek to be a whistleblower. I had no idea what that even was. And my friends laugh. They're like, you are the least likely person on the whole planet to like be in this role right now. And like, they're like, how are you here? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's baffling to all of us, but, so I didn't seek to be a whistleblower. I just wanted to have a voice and say something isn't right here. And then things just kind of escalated when I was being met with so much hostility and just resistance. And at some point, the people I was talking with were like, okay, yeah, this is like a whistleblower case where you could potentially, you know, influence some change. Wow. And for anyone else who has these concerns, like, please say something. I know that I have not made it sound super fun to be a whistleblower, but people keep telling me, like, you're going to be on the right side of history. And that means so much to me. Like, my kids are going to be so proud of me down the road, you know? And when things shift in our favor and we're taking care of kids in the way that they deserve to be taken care of, like, I will, I 100% believe I will be, quote, on the right side of history. And so that, like, gives me, I don't know, just that's what I want for myself. And so I would hope that anyone else who has these concerns, just know that, you know, right now you might be making things harder for yourself, but the you of the future is going to be so proud that you stood for what you believed in.
Oh, good for you.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much. We'll wrap up our main portion here and we'll continue this conversation in the Substack. Okay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us this week on Gender, A Wider Lens.
If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
And be sure to visit us on Substack by going to widerlenspod.com. There you can join our listener community, access bonus content and resources, plus learn about additional ways to support the show.
Our discussions are for educational purposes and are not intended as a substitute for mental health services.